Chuck and I usually, and have done workshops for 7 years now, doing anti-racism workshops, inclusiveness workshops, and it's usually built on a 3-day or a 2-day thing where you get something and then you build on and then you build on and you build on. And because we're not doing that style quite that way this time, we're going to have to begin each time just sharing our definitions. And that's usually a process of agreeing on definitions. But today and for this time, we're going to ask that you hear our definitions, and even if, and if you want to dialogue about them at other times, that's wonderful, and we're willing, we're all. But for the sake of communication, I'd like you to understand what we mean when we say racism and what we mean when we say prejudice. To start out with, everyone is prejudiced. And I think that's because of the tendency of our human mind not to be able to deal with all kinds of fragmented information and wanting to categorize it. And so we meet something. We say, oh, mountains. Chuck and I are from the Midwest. And I thought Rib Mountain in Wisconsin was the mountain, you know. But what happened to us is we knew mountains. Well, we kind of had an idea what mountain looked like. We'd been to Denver. We have an idea of mountain. And then as we came across from Rapid City, we went through Wyoming to Yellowstone. And the mountains weren't the same. You know, they look different, and all our prejudices about mountains changed because we had more information. So everyone is prejudiced because you kind of say, well, I've had this experience, and that, therefore these things. Attitudes or opinions based on prejudgment and insufficient information about a group of people. You know, when we talk about prejudice here, we're talking about people, usually of a hostile nature, because those are the characteristics we tend to look at. Although not always, we can be prejudiced and... You can meet a Korean child that's brilliant and say, well, all Korean children are brilliant. When you meet my son, you'll know that. But it's usually a hostile nature. That's usually what we mean when we talk about, well, that's prejudice. There's kind of a negative attitude or opinion there. Everyone, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, can be prejudiced and tend to be prejudiced based on personal experience or group experience. For us, the difference between prejudice and racism is any attitude or action or institutional practice which subordinates people because of their color or language. It's power plus prejudice. Power is the power of the institutions, the power of society, the power of media, the power of the church to enforce the prejudices of the major group. So in the United States today, there's my line, in the United States today, only white people are racist because we have the power to enforce our prejudice. Live with that for the next couple of hours and talk to us about that as you think about it. And then we'll be doing more about that as the week goes on. But that's kind of the overview and the hook for each of our sessions. That's kind of how we're going to start and go from there. But that's not what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it from a different point of view. Can you hear me in that tape recorder when I'm talking to the board? We found this calendar this morning, and it was sitting there, and it's just perfect. I think somebody put it in here just for us. If you want to know more about those definitions, by the way, this is in the bookstore. It's called Definitions of Racism. What are they selling it for?
50 cents.
It's worth having because it summarizes and explains much more what I've just said. It even gives you some added definitions, like black is being told you must earn the rights that the U.S. Constitution guarantees to all U.S. citizens. Good definitions in the back, too. But pick that up and take a look at it up at the bookstore. That does a lot more than I can do. Today, our sun, weaving the sunshine, is really a time for us to do an explanation of why we're about what we're about, and hopefully to get you on board on some of the thinking and theological or biblical or stuff that we're about. So that's kind of what the sunshine, with S-O-N, weaving the sunshine is. Because the two of us really feel like we've been handed a biblical mandate to do this, and a mandate that we just can't let go of. The trouble that we always have is that we're preachers. You know, the two of us are preachers, and we do this every Sunday. You know, you try to take a little piece of what you believe, and it gets expounded, and now you take one session, and you're supposed to pull that all together, so we can't do that. So what we're going to do is create today a weaving of some, and looking, and if you ever look at a weaving, you don't very often take the individual warp and woof of a weaving and say, look at that thread. So what I'm going to do today is talk about just a couple of the warps and woofs of our weaving, our faith lives, who we are as faithful people. What makes us, now if my subject were some other thing that I was doing, you know, sometimes we do stuff on battering and other things, I might do a little different weave, the threads, I would pull out different threads to show you. But because we're talking about inclusiveness, the threads of my faith are going to be the threads that lead me to working for inclusiveness. And when I say working for inclusiveness, I'm sometimes talking about working for diversity. Does that make sense? Because I don't want us all to be the same. That's not what I'm talking about inclusiveness. I'm really talking about celebrating diversity, being inclusive in the fact that we can celebrate all the many gifts that we have. I'm going to start out with, who's a weaver? Who's a weaver? Who knows something about weaving? Okay, you start out by putting... Warp.
Called dressing the room.
All right. Well, we're gonna put some warp on, but I'm gonna be put. You gotta kind of turn the loom around. I'm gonna put them this way. So we're gonna dress the loom backwards. With just three of the threads of our biblical foundation. But while I'm doing that, I want you to be thinking, because I'm gonna ask you to help when I'm done. Just think of a couple threads that you might want to add, because I am certainly, I don't think about everything all at once. You know, you sit down at one time and pull some things together, but you are resources for us to help us put some more threads. The first one, this is a wonderful thread. Do you like this? This is why they have me teaching this class and not crafts. It's not funny. Every human being is created in God's image. Part of our mandate, part of what we hear when we talk about inclusiveness, part of what we hear in our daily lives as inner city, urban, parish pastors, part of what we see when we walk around God's creation is that all human beings are created in God's image. And in Genesis you read, this is not the RSV translation, it's really the Sue Really translation. So God created humankind in God's image. In the image of God, God created them. And then if you read on through all of that, chapter 1, verse 27 through 31, you get to, and God saw everything that God had made, and behold, it was very good. Everything that God had made was very good, created in God's image. That's wonderful stuff. An aside, you know, I'm really trying, Chuck. I'm going to keep it in the time. he just gets relaxed.
Those
he knows.
Those of you who aren't from the Midwest may not be familiar with tag team wrestling. That's the way we work. At some point, I leap into the ring and gag her out. For so just hang on.
When we drove that drought to take a week to get here, we came through an incredible experience. And my son Young said one day, tell us a sermon. They were bored. What he did was really funny. He went through the liturgy with us, and they started the liturgy of a Sunday morning Eucharist liturgy. You know, they said, "What comes first?" And then we all tried to remember what, and they remembered the order of service. And we got to the sermon, and he said, "We'll do a little one." And I started talking about how this trip had made me aware of God's creation again, and the beauty of God's creation, and the mountains, and the grass, and the plains, and that just was such an overpowering thing for me again. You know, Midwest is not always remind me. You know, I've done those routes so many times. Between Milwaukee and Madison is a beautiful road, I think, but I've gone through it so many times, I don't get energized by it, but I was energized and thinking, today, was that this morning when I said to Chuck, remind me of mountains and people. I live in a place in the city of Milwaukee where once I leave my door, I cannot not see the beauty of God's creation in the people around me. You know, and I forgot that when I was looking at the mountains, that God, it doesn't say, and on the seventh day, God created mountains. You know, the pinnacle of creation were these human beings created in God's image. And when I walk out my door, the human beings I see created in God's image, some of them look like you all, and some of them look a lot darker than you all, and it's really kind of neat. But I get daily the whole range of created in God's image, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, all those things. I'm rushing. One of the things you'll learn this week, if you stay with us, is I talk fast because I have 3 hours of stuff to do every time I stand up, and then I have all the stuff that's not printed on this paper. It's wonderful. In Christ, then, we are all sisters and brothers. A little different slant on that, but in Christ, in our Lord, we are sisters and brothers. And that talks not just about being created in God's image, but how we need to see and look at one another when we do that. In Galatians we read, "For as many of you were baptized into Christ, have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." And for that, for this, for me, is the oneness, the wholeness of being brothers and sisters. And we don't divide ourselves up on by categories. Well, we do, but we're not supposed to, I guess. Or if we do, we better recognize why we're doing that. I need another color here on my weaving. This is going to get better. I promise you that. All related, but different. And he had put all things under his feet and had made him the head over all things for the church, which is the body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Now there are a variety of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of services, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of working, but it is the same God who inspires them all and every one. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many are one body, so it is with Christ. And that's us. So no matter what we do, what our gifts are, what our talents are, how we look, we're part of the body of Christ. And why would we want to take that apart and claim parts of the body not to be part of the body? So those are my three kind of threads I wanted to put down there. Before I go on with some of the warp here, the other way, for me, what should I add? Why don't you take, got a minute? Do we have a minute? Take a minute with the persons around you. Talk about these three. If there's a reaction, you know, I may have missed something here, or there may not be something. So if you want to talk about that, get it together. And then see if there's some more threads I need to add this way before we add some of where this leads us in our lives will be the... If these are the bottom kind of beliefs, there are some places it leads us, and that's what we're going to talk about next. Take a minute to talk to the person next to you. Come up with some more for me. And then just get them out there. you can just take your breath, which is what I'm doing. Well, do we have something else you want to add? What's that? We're not going to have a blue strand here. Yeah, we've got one here. We live in the grace of Christ. What, for me, let me just do one. What that says to me is, let's not spend a whole lot of time today on our good Lutheran guilt about, oh my gosh, I fall short, but that this thread is the thread that says, I heard you saying, you know, that the pain of racism is that we pass it on from generation to generation, and we learn to hate each other from each other, and we teach each other, and we reinforce each other. That's kind of that power plus prejudice. We use the powers of our groupness to enforce our prejudices. So this says, this cuts through it. It says we are grace-filled, and that means we can do something else. Anybody else want to put a thing here, or should I just keep going?
This one's kind of negative, but judge not lest you be judged or something.
Don't take all my thunder. Okay. There's this one. It's, you know, you'll notice as I do my lines up and down that I'm not really being real tight here, because what's going to happen as I'm starting to weave this is you're going to see that this is a weaving, my weaving, and even if we all believe all these things, even if I put these threads, each one down on the floor, and said, "Do you believe this? And do you believe that?" And then I can weave them together in your picture of your weaving, your faith. Your faith statement would be very different than mine. Even though we're all using the same kinds of threads here, they come out differently. And that's what we're talking about. Very picture of what we're talking about in all this stuff, that even though we look a little different and act a little different, sometimes they're just pictures of our weavings, our personhoods, all created in God's image. I love it. I'm going to put this one here. It's called baptism. You may lose that a little bit in if you're trying to take notes here. Don't try to take notes. Through baptism, God has a special claim on our lives. And because we've been made special children of God, we're claimed by God. And that leads us to see the world a little different, in a little different light than others. For me, being baptized is a lot like saying I'm Lutheran, you know? How do I say this? The kingdom of God is real, and baptism makes that, for me, very real. But there's an element of God's kingdom here, but not yet. You know? It's real, but not yet. It's here, but not quite. And maybe some of the Bible study this morning helped on that, a lot on that, talking about darkness and light. A reality of baptism that says, you are a child of God, you're perfect, you're whole, you're wonderful, you're clean, but not quite, you know, and that's kind of where we all are. I'm 100% a child of God through my baptism, yet I constantly fall short. of what that means. And so that, for me, has to be a thread, and it's a thread that says the reality of being taught and teaching racism is there in my life. And I am a racist just by virtue of being white, even though I've been baptized in daily plans. The church, and some of this is for some of you ELCA folks, that's the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the new United thing. We claim to be inclusive now. We've done inclusiveness in the church. Some of the boards and the divisions and the heads and all that stuff, we worked really hard on quotas and inclusiveness. So we're inclusive, but not yet. Just because if we took half of this room now and brought people of color to replace half of this room, that may give us the start of becoming inclusive. By looking at us, we are inclusive, but not yet. You know, there's something more to being diverse group and inclusive than just having faces that look different. And all this has to do with baptism. It has more to do with lots of things, but there we go. There's a strand in my weaving that probably is very central, and it's called justice. Through the prophets, through the life and witness of Jesus, in the Psalms, in many of the Old Testament stories, there's a constant theme of seeking justice. Sometimes, for me, the cry for seeking justice is so loud that I want to cover my ears. You know, it's a cry to care for the poor and the oppressed, the rejected of society. And for me, the mandate for justice means working against that which oppresses. And it's an important part of being created in God's image and being brothers and sisters in Christ. There's a matter. I'm going to wait to put this thread up because I have to finish this section, because the thread starts out in a real negative way, but I think we'll come back around. There's a matter of sin. And for me, that's a reality here. And we need to talk about sin when we talk about racism. I'm not talking about, we're not talking about racism and inclusiveness because it's a social ill. That's true, but that's not why we talk about it. We talk about it because it's sin. And it is a very real, awful sin. And it's the crux of that sin is not like talking about the sin of pornography, you know, where we could all get together and kind of agree. I think we could all agree that pornography is oppressive and oppresses people, and there's kind of an understanding. That's really an awful example, now that I think about it, because I could go on with that. But it's more than that that I'm talking about, and it's probably part of pornography, part of what I'm talking about, is that we're talking about the sin of breaking all the commandments simultaneously. Breaking the Ten Commandments simultaneously. That's hard for me to think about it, but that's what came about when I was putting this together. Because the sin of oppression is the sin of deciding that God did not do it right. The sin of oppression is the sin of deciding that God did not do it right, and that God should have created the oppressor as superior to the one who is oppressed. Does that make sense? I mean, it sure makes sense when you think about how we live. And that, my friends, that is playing God. You know, that's the sin of oppression is the sin of playing God. And when we play God, we're making ourselves into God. And that's making ourselves sovereign. And whenever that happens, death happens. Adultery happens. Coveting, stealing become lifestyles. So maybe this thread, however it looks, Don't let me use that blue one anymore. It's the sovereignty of God. Crumb, how do you spell sovereignty? I should write these on my papers. Ah, you figure it out. That's sovereignty. You got it. We don't. It doesn't say anything here. For our tapestry, and you want to put these strands on, and I'll just read this thing. Just put the whole bunch of strands on in there. For our tapestry of faith, we add a multitude of threads, bright and shining, white, dark, beautiful browns, golden earth tones, with a variety of colors coming together to form the tapestry. And for us, these are the strands, that he's adding now that are keeping us to work to combat racism and fighting oppression. It is through our work that the tapestry of our faith has been enriched. So the more we do workshops and the more we talk about inclusiveness and the more we work towards it, our own faith tapestries become more beautiful and more, they're more to him, and really neat things happen to the threads that, and the threads that come from learning black gospel music or spirituals or Hispanic corritos or Native American drum songs, the threads that come in new food tastes and the friendship of people whose skin color or features and hair offer new meanings to the word created in God's image. With each opportunity to work for inclusiveness, God reveals herself in new ways. And that's what we're about. Now, okay, now it's your turn. What other threads should I add here? While I'm doing that, you can talk about transition. I didn't do this one. Okay. What else should I add here?
Love,
great. Love.
Patience.
Do I have to put that on my weaving?
Put that on yours.
No, there wasn't patience. I don't expect, maybe patience is a wonderful one because we didn't tell you this, but Chuck and I are running on the 500 to 1,000 year plan. That's how we see working for inclusiveness. So maybe that's another word for patience.
What we need to do is figure out how we fit into God's, play a part in God's plan for salvation. It's not our plan for salvation, and we work in and for the kingdom, but we don't bring it about. It's that issue of sovereignty.
What else should I put up here?
Sharing.
I like that much better than helping.
How about caring?
Caring. I like caring. You like my weaving? You see it? Just think if I had a couple more pens here.
Actually, one of the things we're going to do now is I brought along a loom, and Sue's going to hand out some strips of paper. And we're going to ask that you help us begin to make a faith weaving that would include our foundational assumptions and our commitments about being an inclusive church. I think we understand that to be whole as a church, it's not an optional thing that we have as a part of our community, persons of color, black Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans. That's not optional because we're not whole without that. If we believe this stuff about being created in God's image, we can't witness all of God to the world unless we're all together, and as a communion, as the Lutheran Church, you know, we may live in a community where perhaps that's not possible on Sunday morning to witness that, but that doesn't mean that we still don't have that concern that we need to be part and whole because of the gifts, because of the talents, because of the perspective that
people from other cultures and other backgrounds, whether it be differences in terms of race, in terms of sexual preference, in terms of gender, in terms of class, that we need all of those perspectives, all of those people who were created in God's image to be whole. And so what we'd like to do now, what we want to try and do is while you're working on your little slip of paper, also to leave that as some time for some discussion. Let's see, and in the green... No. Yeah. Did you find them in the bag?
No.
I've got some more magic markers here. So we would ask you to write on there a faith statement, what we wrote on here, you know, created in God's image, all people, a faith statement or a belief or a vision you might have for the church in terms of being whole, particularly as it regards to matters of race, in terms of being inclusive. If you would do that, and then as we finish today, we'll weave these together and make a weaving up here, and we'll leave it up here for the coming days and weeks even. But at this point, as you begin to do that, let's...
Let them talk.
Yeah. Do folks have any questions, feedback?
I was going to confront this all week, so I guess I'd like to just ask the question
sure.
right now. The word inclusiveness, why is it at Holden just peppered all over the place? I hear Christ referred, or God referred to as her. That isn't any more inclusive than Christ, God being referred to as him.
That's right. That's right. Except that it opened, for me, it opens the dimension. I grew up feeling somehow less than the men around me because they were more in God's image than I, because God was male. Because you know, all I heard was male God language. So for me, I tried to blend the he's and she's because I don't want God in, for me, it's not an it in the. Not because it for me is inanimate, so it's a way of reminding myself that I too am in God's image. And so that the female God language is real important for me to talk to me, remind me that I'm whole and that I'm created in God's image.
So this is a term that we will probably be hearing from now on for the 500,000 years.
I hope that that God's 1,000-year plan includes some wonderful images that aren't male and female, but that's that anthropos idea, the humankind that gives us that sense of that being female is wonderful, and it's also in the image of God, and being male is wonderful, and it's in the image of God.
Yep. It distresses me because what I hear is people saying, "Hey, I'm in distress, and I've got to express it," and it just makes me feel guilty for not feeling that way. And so then it conjures
distress of mine, but it's celebration.
Yeah, and for our workshop, for example, or our sessions, you know, it would be just as interesting because I think if we did it consistently as some of us do in terms of particularly gender language for referring to God, if we talked about God as being black or red or as God as having almond-shaped eyes. As a matter of fact, where's that Easter bulletin? Because there is one here with almond-shaped eyes. Is it up? Yes, here it is. Yeah, Easter. Okay, this bulletin cover. Our congregation, as a matter of fact, our church secretary didn't want to use it because it wasn't Western art.
She said
this
it wasn't good art.
This is not the image of God that she
didn't say Western art. She said it wasn't good art.
Yeah. Okay. It was, when we use language and when we get away from male and I've got, you know, I'll be surprised if someone says they don't picture God or Jesus as being white, because boy, all the pictures I ever saw growing up, my whole experience of what Jesus looked like as an incarnate God and what God looks like are all male and white. They're Western, and that's okay. So we don't want to put down that, but we're saying to be whole, we need to allow ourselves to understand and appreciate and celebrate the beauty, the diversity of other visions of the God experience, because ours is just one little thread. And we need all those threads in order to have the weaving. If you take a beautiful weaving and start pulling threads out, it starts looking kind of strange after a while.
Look at all the threads. How did you guys come up with the concept of the weaving? I mean, obviously you don't come from that background because you asked someone out here. But I think it's a great analogy. I think it probably works real well. But it's a foundation you've got right now, and I'm kind of curious as to where you, because you're going to live with this for a long time.
Well, well, in the church we call it the work of the Holy Spirit. I mean, I'm serious. I am not making fun about
no,
that.
No,
because it's a gift that has come to us.
I can't pull all these threads together. How do I pull these threads together? You know, and then I thought, well, I pulled them together in my life. You know, and that's kind of just where that came from. But that's why I don't know the proper words for warp and woof, but I've seen weavings.
But it's very important to you, isn't it? I mean, this whole concept. I mean, not so much the racism, but the fact that you're going to take these things, you're going to weave them together. And we may add something in this room
to
this, and then you walk away from that with a greater experience.
Yeah.
Because you got a bigger blanket.
Precisely. And that's, I mean, if this can be a model, I used to use the word paradigm, but that gets a little... if this can be a model for all of us in terms of why it's exciting as the Lutheran Church to become more and more inclusive in terms of different peoples, in terms of their culture, their background, their understanding, their vision, their language for describing God, because we become wholer, we become fuller, we become more. It builds us up. It doesn't take away from us. Because if we're working out of guilt or an understanding that what we are is complete, and then if someone else is different, that makes us less. And that happened... That happened a lot in the 60s, you know, with the Black Power movement and the consciousness movements among people of color. White folks got real uncomfortable with that. You know, black is beautiful, white's beautiful too. Well, of course white is beautiful. And the golden, my son, Young, who's Korean, when he gets a tan, he just turns gold. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And that's the richness of creation. So it doesn't detract from who I am, but it adds to, if indeed we believe in, if we believe what we say we believe, that we're created in God's image. It adds to creation, not detracts from. So that's why it's exciting, because as a church, if we could understand the need for all of us to be a part of this larger weaving, so that even if we're in an all-white community, we still can appreciate the tapestry through liturgy and music, perhaps, through using a variety of sources and resources for what we do. We can appreciate it by being active, and we use the word anti-racist. We believe that white folks can be one of two things. They can be racist or anti-racist. You can say, well, I'm not racist, but if you don't do anything about your and our cultural or systemic racism, then you're, you know, because it's the, you know, the silence is to support the way things are.
And the way things are is
racist. So that to be an anti-racist means to make a conscious commitment that even though I have many privileges because of my white skin, and that's really true, and I hope in the next days and weeks we can talk a lot about that, but it really is true that I can go places and do things and be who I am in a much different way than almost any person of color I know. Because for one thing, in this country, I can be a white person and choose to live in places and do business and all of my life totally separated from persons of color. In our country, persons of color don't have that option. As a matter of fact, most of us are monocultural. And we're the less for it. People of color have to be bicultural. You have to live in your own roots, but you also have to know, we were sharing with someone at breakfast this morning how in our community, you know that you've got a friendship with someone when you find out what their real name is. because most people, most communities of color, there are, the tradition is to have name, whether it's Native American with a traditional Native name, and then a, and then the name that you got to have so the kid can go to school. Well, that's true in the Black community, where folks have their community,
they
or
have their, white
their street name, and then, you know, and then they have their, you know, and they're bicultural. They really are.
Excuse me, can we just ask some questions?
Sure, yeah.
I have a question for you in regards to private school versus public school.
Oh, right. Ask him.
Okay. there's a great number of, there's a lot of emphasis in our society right now. Okay, you put children in private school, I think, as a result of better discipline situations, for whatever the reasons may be. And then there's a lot of other people who are pulling towards the public school. And I just like to get your opinion.
Well, later in the week, we'll talk about more about analyzing racism, particularly systemic racism, in terms of how we all participate in that, and ways we can both identify and perhaps work to change systems so that they're more equitable in terms of people of color in our country. And one of the forms of racism that we talk about is correlate racism, okay? So I think sometimes that public-private school debate is a form of either covert racism, where it's hidden, intentionally hidden, where people just don't want their kids going to school with kids of color. And that's true in many of our urban areas, okay? And I know where you all come from, but it's true in many of our urban areas. And as a church, we often have church schools, and we sometimes got to be careful about what we do with that.
In our community, the church schools are, in fact, the place where white folks are sending their kids so that they don't have to be in the public school system. So it is a major concern.
But there can also be genuine, I mean, there are differences in schools, and people can have some genuine concerns about
that. And we struggle with that with our kids.
I don't see it because of a race, though. I see it as the reason being to, when you meet a person, it's not seeing them as black or brown or whatever, or white. It's when you look at other parts of the person. You start talking to the person, you see where the person has come from. In the public schools, whether it's a black kid or a white kid, he could have a knife in his back, you know, in his pocket. And I think that's why you're pointing him out in the public schools, not because he's a black kid or because race enters it at all. Because I think that you're trying to hide or trying to tear your kid away from that a setting that
I want to agree with you and disagree with you, and I want to agree with you because there are a lot of reasons, and that I have two 14-year-old boys who I want to have a good education defined by me, you know. I mean, I sent my kids to school for the arts for a reason in Milwaukee.
Anywhere you
want. So there's a real sense of that. Yeah, but the disagreement is that people use a lot of language oftentimes to cover their basic understanding and belief that people of color are language. And I'm very conscious that in North Dakota, people say we don't have that problem, and they live a half mile from an Indian reservation, and you just dismiss Native Americans as being totally not there. And so we don't have that problem because we don't have blacks. And so that all that... The reality is, for us, that a lot of people mix their racism and classism. Education is a classist thing in this country, in our Constitution. It says the right to free education, all that stuff that we base all that thing is really meant if you were landed and white and male, you had a right to things. But if you weren't, that you weren't included. And that carries through in our education system today. And people base their classism. People who are black, are poor, are on welfare, don't want to be educated, are stuck in the system, and I don't want my kids going to school there because they're not going to get an education. And teachers teach that way, so your kid doesn't get an education. And
it
perpetuates itself. But one of the parts of that perpetuating itself is ingrained racism. On the attitude of the teachers, and the attitude of the administration, on the basis of school, on the basis of Iowa Basic Skills, that's what I didn't take, I don't know what you had to take, but that basic skills test, that is standardized on white kids. And that means that kids of color or other cultural kids are penalized at least 10%, 10 points, by if they take those tests. So, you know, we worked hard to keep, when our son came at age 9, and we worked, until this year, we managed to keep him in a place where they weren't giving tests. So
juggle
we,
around.
So because that he wasn't class, you know, but we failed this year. We had to keep him in the same school. But there is some racism. For us, it goes further because we're an inner city parish, and people have left our church in the same way they've left the schools. So we see it in a different place. Because we're in a community that was all white. It's almost about 80% black now. The congregation moved out. Some people still come in, but many people don't come in. And they used reasons like it's too far to drive, it's changing, we wanted a church where our children could get whatever. But all those reasons. But this last year, we had a real painful experience in Milwaukee. A woman was refused a call, but our congregation didn't vote to call her after the call committee had met and all this stuff. And the people literally, actually said, no matter what has happened in the press since then, when asked by the bishop assistant at the meeting, they were told, we do not want a black woman pastor of this congregation. Yes, she's qualified, but we don't want a black woman pastor. And that's my fault. And that's where racism comes in, and it comes into the school. There's all kinds of reasons that they could have given, but they said that aloud. And my fault, because I let people leave my congregation, and I'm talking about me and every other inner-city Lutheran pastor who said to people, sure, go, we understand that you're driving a long distance, when in fact we knew in our guts that part of it was that they didn't want to be in the same place as black people. And we said, sure, go. And they formed those ring around the city. I said, new parallel. Ring around the city. The dirty collar. The ring around the city congregations that have no inclusiveness, no diversity, and don't know how to celebrate it. And we allowed that to happen without saying, sure, go. But you can't go carrying hatred for black people out there because that's a sin. We never said that to them when they left. So they could carry their hatred or their fake racism and their feelings without ever being challenged on them. And we didn't challenge them to say, "Don't, we can't be Lutheran and do it."
There was another question back.
You said that the flight to private schools is more to do with class than it does with race. Many of the private schools do have, I'm from San Francisco, and many
that's
of them
right.
are Asian and black, and
right.
so on, but they come from families of professional people,
yeah.
and they, the kids are, it's a class situation.
Well,
I mind if my kid goes to school with black kids or with Asian kids as long as they're
right.
smart.
And Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, we're going to spend most of our time talking about those different forms of oppression and how they're interrelated.
We have another. We have another model that we're very excited about. Is the weaving?
It's our.
I like it.
Our
we
cubes.
We have another one. You'll love it.
Come for cubes to cross. If you liked weavings, you'll love From Cubes to Crosses. Don't.
You know, you asked earlier how you pictured your own personal weaving.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was kind of interesting. I see it colorless. I see it completely clear. And just the images of words. Because there's a purity involved, a purity of soul, is the way I look at it. Whatever color it is, but when babies are born, you know, there's a purity that unites all. And it's growing up that the colors are noticed, you know, and anyway.
Interestingly, though, in our language, purity denotes what? White as snow? Not black is, well, I just ask you to play with some of those things in your mind in terms of how subtle we can have. Because I would like to say, I would encourage people to say, I see your blackness because I see
the richness in that. I see your Hispanic culture in you.
One of the worst compliments anyone ever gives me is that when I'm as a pastor, I'm just like a man. You know, I mean, that there's a, you know, that's an affront. I am not male, and I hope I preach like a male. No, I don't. You know, I hope not. I hope there's something about my personhood that I don't want to be denied my femaleness. And persons of color, when someone, and this is not what you're saying, and I hear the difference, but when someone says, I don't see color, when they talk about people, I always want to say, well, what do you see? Because people who say they don't see color usually make everyone white. You know, when you say you don't see color, it doesn't mean everyone looks the same. It means everyone looks the same like me. And there, you know, you kind of compare it. I don't see color means I'm white.
It means you're not generalizing. That's what it means in my idea. That you're not generalizing, that you're not going to put them into a mold.
That's what people mean by what they say. But oftentimes what they're really underlying thing is that there's kind of a wanting things to include. That's why I have trouble with the word inclusiveness. Because sometimes we want to include everyone to be like us, instead of to celebrate diversity, and that's why the weaving and all the different strands come together. Talk more about that, because that's a real subtle difference in one of the ones we have to play.
Well, the weaving is going around.
Bye! Be sure to put
the
your strand
in. The weaving's coming around, and let's see, before everyone gets away, up in the bookstore, there are a number of resources. Sue mentioned the definitions. There's a book by Joe Bart entitled Liberating Our White Ghetto, and Joe's book looks much more carefully and in-depth, as does this book by Bob Terry for Whites Only.
I want to say something about those books. We would like to find other books. We'd like both of those guys to rewrite their books with their language, aware of what we've learned in the last 10, 15, 20 years about language. But they're still the best things out on racism. But the sexism is, you got to remember, we know both these guys, and they've changed their language.
Yeah, they're good guys. But back then, they hadn't, as most of us males, hadn't come to celebrate inclusive language. So two good resources that are up there in terms of looking at racism as what that means for us as white folks. Two other really neat resources, Wild Lord, Psalms and Sermons from Namibia, in terms of hearing some faith perspective from a black Namibian perspective, and another book, In Accord, Let Us Worship, a book which has a variety of prayers and litanies and reflections from a rainbow of people from across the globe.
Wonderful resources.
Just marvelous. You know, if you're in a parish where you don't have other resources to be near you, you could use songs and litanies out of here and understand some of this wholeness and celebrate some of that wholeness and not feel like, well, we don't have any black folk or Asian folk or other folk here, so how can we be that whole church?